And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to talk today to the president of Azad Kashmir and it's a very important story, long neglected by the media here. That's why we do the Taylor Report, as you know. And we also expect to be talking sometime soon, shortly, with Captain John Turnbull of the Freedom boat, the vessel, the sailing boat that went to, attempted to reach the port of Gaza, was intercepted, boarded in international waters. It's a very important story. I don't think it's been in the Globe. I know it hasn't been in the Star. I doubt that it's been in CBC. A captain of an experienced sailor has been interrupted, or pardon me, boarded by the Israelis. Well, I think I'm going on too long. We have, I think, Captain John Turnbull with us. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Hello, Phil.
Hello. Thank you for joining us. You were the captain of the, you're minus a ship these days, but you were sailing in a ship called the Freedom under a Swedish flag, if I have it right, and were in international waters when you were boarded by the Israeli, I guess, defense forces. Can you tell us what happened, why you were there, and what happened?
Sure. Well, the why I was there is a little more interesting than what actually happened. I was there to try to demonstrate, not so much to the Israeli government, but to the governments of Europe and my own government in Canada, our own government in Canada, that we believe the blockade is wrong. I think it's wrong legally. That gets into some fine detail that we don't necessarily need right now. But I think it's wrong morally. It's been in place for 12 years. It's a punishment of civilians. It's a collective punishment of civilians. It's unnecessary. And it simply extends a rather perverse interdependency between Hamas and the Israeli Defense Forces. Mm-hmm. So we've thought for some years that it should be broken, and sailing a boat of any kind into it and forcing our governments to pay attention to this issue is what we've been trying to do. And it's been increasingly successful. This has gone on since about 2007 or 8, when there was an original Jewish boat to Gaza, mm-hmm. which left Israel and sailed south. You may recall the 2010 incident with the Mavi Marmara, where 10 people were killed in a rather large ship, killed by people rappelling down from helicopters in the dark. Mm-hmm. It was an incredibly dumb move militarily.
Mm-hmm.
And the year after that, my wife, Karen DeVito, participated in the 2011 campaign, a mainly Canadian campaign.
You're from a sailing family.
Well, yes. Yeah, we can't stay away from the boats. So this is just one of a series. This my experience this year with the sailing ship Freedom, and with its companion in the flotilla, a Norwegian fishing boat. This is just the latest of a series of attempts to break this blockade.
Well, what did you have aboard? You had 10 passengers. Did you have material? And what were you intending? What would you have done had you been allowed to go through?
Well, yeah, that was a question we asked many times as we approached the port of Gaza. As it happens, the port of Gaza is not very deep. They can't afford to dredge it, and we probably would have run aground in a sort of embarrassing way just inside the harbor. Yeah, it would not have been a problem. It's a sand bottom, but we were amused by that possibility. We had aboard some medical supplies, and this amounted to perhaps several hundred dollars worth of dressings for wounds, various kinds of bandages, and the kind of stuff that a hospital goes through on a daily basis, particularly a hospital like the ones in Gaza that are dealing now with hundreds, in fact, I think about 4,000 woundings of people by sniper fire. But I do want to emphasize that the medical stuff we took was kind of a side issue. It's a little bit like taking a bottle of wine when your friends invite you to dinner. It was a courtesy. It's not enough medical stuff to really make a difference. It was as much as we could store in the sailboat. But it really is just a courtesy. The real issue is that Gaza is perfectly capable of having an economy that could pay for hospitals. It turns out doctors by the dozens. It's a very sophisticated, well-educated place that if it had a port and if it had access to the rest of the world, as every other port city in the world does, it would have an economy that would keep people prosperous and happy.
Yes. I've seen a statement by yourself that made a point that I hadn't realized. It said that this port in Gaza is the only closed port in the Mediterranean.
Yeah, I think that's true. Somebody may come up with some other minor port, but, you know, we visited a lot of ports between Gothenburg in Sweden, where the boat originated, and nearly Gaza. You know, every port you come into, it's clear that there's a whole lot of money changing hands. There's a whole lot of movement and cargo, and that the life of the city and the economy of the country, of course, we all know this from our geography lessons in high school, that all depends on access to ports. And to close a port, just imagine for a moment that even the port of Toronto, you know, which is not as active as it used to be, but imagine closing that port. Imagine closing the port of Halifax.
Yes.
And surrounding the city of Halifax with a wire fence and then shooting at people in Halifax. The world would be outraged. Mm-hmm. And it baffles me that the world is not outraged at this atrocity.
Yeah. We're speaking to Captain John Turnbull. By the way, it's a sailing vessel. That was a rather unique for boarding. And there's a little more some issues there of safety of people, right? It's not so simple for a motorized vehicle vessel, to come alongside a sailing ship, because a sailing ship is kind of a little different. Did you have concerns in that way?
Oh, I did, yeah. We were all lucky, but the Israelis particularly were lucky, that it was a fairly quiet night. We had very strong winds on the way in. They settled down as evening approached, as often happens in the Mediterranean. And so we only had about 8 or 10 knots of wind, and a boat, quite a heavy boat, was only doing about 4 or 5 knots. Fairly stable, fairly level on deck. I have to say, the Israelis have learned to play this game after making some really dumb moves early on. They've figured out how to come alongside with diesel-powered, inflated, essentially landing craft with platforms on the front. And they kind of stream aboard with their guns and a bullhorn. You know, this was not the first contact, of course, but as these boats approached on either side of us from astern, they kind of pinched in at our beam. And the bullhorn said, ladies and gentlemen, we are the Israeli Navy. We come in peace. Uh-huh. And we all laughed. The 12 of us aboard just had a good, hearty laugh about that, because the next thing that happened, of course, was that about 20 soldiers, 10 from each side, boarded the boat with their rifles and sidearms.
Yeah. Of course, by the way, you were already there in peace. You know, I like the expression that we learned actually in previous interviews with others who have been making these attempts to break the illegal blockade of Gaza. There's a conversation that takes place, and I know that the captains have said we are in international waters, and this is we have the right of innocent passage. Did you have any such exchange? Where is that from? You also cite the Law of the Sea of 1982 in terms of your own position, that you're not nothing you were doing was illegal.
Yeah, no, I do believe that, and I believe lots of lawyers. Have looked at it that way as well. I think it's uniquely Israel that sees this as a legal act. Now, mind you, the law of blockade is set up by naval powers for their own good. It was never meant to allow colonialized countries like this get away with anything. So it's a way for naval powers to kind of keep out of each other's way. But blockades were always, like occupations, were always considered to be temporary, subject to military advantage or military strategy. They were never, ever used, to my knowledge anyway, to imprison 2 million people for 12 years. That's not what a blockade is for. Mm-hmm. Even the blockade of Cuba was selective.
Yes.
It did not punish Cuban civilians.
Yes.
So, we had that typical exchange. It was about 7 o'clock when the VHF crackled, and I had a moment of satisfaction when I told them what channel to go to. Traditionally, you know, you wait for the caller to say, go to whatever from 16. I said, go to 72. I went to 72 and thought, they won't do this, will it? But they did. Yeah. So I thought, there's a little victory. Mm-hmm. And it was the typical conventional exchange of identity that you expect from the VHF call. What's your vessel? What are your call signs? But then when they began asking about the number of crew and all that kind of stuff, I said, what's the intent of this call? And why are you querying a yacht, a private yacht, in international waters? And it was at that point, more or less, that they kind of read the Riot Act to us, which I think was pre-recorded, by the way.
When you say the Riot Act, does that mean, do they assert their right as a military? Is they say it's for security? Or what's their excuse?
Yeah, they say this is, they identify themselves as the Israeli Navy. They say you're entering a closed military zone. So the language is very much like the language of areas A and B in the West Bank, where they say the same thing. It's a closed military zone. In other words, the military's taken it over, and you just have to go away. Now, this is a bizarre claim in international waters, especially international waters so close to the Suez Canal, where all kinds of ships pass doing their business every day. And so the Riot Act I refer to, and I put that in quotes, basically says you're entering a closed military zone, you risk confiscation of your vessel, which, by the way, is not in the law of blockade, and they read you that one, and then when you say no thanks, as I did, then they read you a sort of more stern message as well. And at that point, the radio is shut down. You know that they can't hear you, although I called many times to say this is a complex vessel. Boarding it will be dangerous for your troops as well as for our crew. Please tell me what your intentions are. This was sincere. It really is difficult, as you pointed out earlier, to board a sailboat at night. But there was no response to that. And then we found that about an hour, hour and a half later, in the dark by this time, we had lights at all of the cardinal and intercardinal points around the boat, and these began to move in. And then finally, these two very large inflatables came up behind us, and they boarded.
This is Captain John Turnbull from Vancouver. And have you talk to us about the media. Why isn't this being covered? Have you been heard? Have you heard from the CBC or the Globe and Mail, the Toronto Star? Are they doing a story on this?
No, not yet. No, I did just get myself a telephone number in France, so I've been a little hard to reach. Maybe they're trying. If you're out there,
I could give them some tips on how to do this.
I think you know what you're doing there, and.
And the government, you know, it sounds, in a way, it sounds like they had a little bit of a kerfuffle with the earlier ship, and there were some Canadian trade unionists, and one of them ended up in rather poor condition and whatnot. Didn't go so smoothly, but they seemed to want to avoid legal matters. I mean, is it true that they decided you didn't get charged with anything, right? They simply passed you through on the say-so of the Canadian representative?
Yeah, the Israeli law on this is odd, and this will sound a little bit bizarre and Kafkaesque. It is all of that. But the Israeli law is a law of deportation, and it specifies that somebody who wants to stay in Israel but is being deported can stay a certain number of hours, in this case 72 hours, to kind of put together their affairs and collect their salary before they go. We're, of course, in the exact opposite situation. We don't want to be there. And for their part, the Israeli government really doesn't want us there either, because the longer we're there, the more shameful it is. You know, imagine the headlines if I'd been in prison for some time. And so there's this odd tension. In the end, the decision to let us go had nothing to do with the efforts of our Canadian bureaucracy, although I praise their efforts. I'm very grateful for what they tried to do. What it had to do with was the availability of prison guards and overtime, and did they have a truck, and was it today, and was there a flight? It was all very much a matter of mundane practicality. Had nothing to do with their process, and not much to do with pressure from the diplomats.
Yeah. It would have helped that the foreign minister had tweeted something on your behalf.
Well, you know, the embassy there operates at two levels, and I don't fault them. Well, I fault them for operating at the level of support for Israel, but I don't fault them for operating at two diplomatic levels.
Mm-hmm.
The consul did her level best to come to the prison, interview me, make sure that I was healthy, and then attempt to get me out quickly to a place I wanted to go. She did her very best, and she did a good job. However, the Israelis were absolutely coy about my condition and what I had expressed in terms of my desire to get out within a particular time. There's a document that you sign that kind of waives your right to stay. And every time I saw the opportunity to sign this document, well, the Israeli immigration fellow just wasn't available. So there was a game being played there, which I just had to accept. After all, I was behind a steel door almost the entire time I was there.
Yeah. Well, I really liked the effort, and also you've in previous interviews and elsewhere, you remind the world that the Palestinians have been in this situation for 70 years. Gaza for this blockade's been 12, but their lives are horrendous.
Yeah, and I do want to make that point, if you don't mind my stressing it again, and thank you for pointing it out. This, you know, the story of my imprisonment and sailing about and all that is great dinner conversation, and I can tell you some funny stories that happened, and I won't do that now. Because the real story is about 6.5 million people, Palestinians, 6.5 million of them, who in the West Bank are in a medium security prison. They can't come in or out without permission of the Israeli border guard, and they don't often get it. Some of them are in prisons within that prison, literally prison buildings. They are political prisoners, and many of them, a significant number, are children.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's Gaza, which is just a gigantic 2-million-person prison camp into which the IDF uses sniper fire to combat the danger of a peaceful demonstration, a march against the fence. Mm-hmm. If this happened in Poland, or in Romania, as it did
Ukraine
some years ago,
or
the Ukraine, or anywhere else, the world would be outraged.
Yes,
if children were being killed in this manner, this is not warfare.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a natural disaster. It is a policy of a government that is allied with our Canadian government, and it disgusts me to have to say this, that our government supports this nonsense at that diplomatic level that I mentioned earlier, because, of course, while the consul is doing her best to get me out of Israel, the embassy itself is working very hard to create ties between Canadian academic and technical institutions, trade, etc. This is terrifying that we're doing this for a country which by policy is killing 1 million children with poisoned water.
Well, John Turnbull, I based on what you said, I know you were satisfied with your effort. I know that Freedom Flotilla is an inspiring group of people. And we thank you very, very much for talking to us. And we want to talk to you in the future because, as we both know, this is going to go on for a while.
I'm afraid it is. So I look forward to talking to you again about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night.
That is Captain John Turnbull of the Freedom It is a sailing vessel. We're going to take a break, and a very short one, and we're going to come back with an interview with the president of Azad Kashmir.